Blog Talk Radio.
Well, good evening, one and all, and welcome to Blog Talk Radio. It's Trisha's True Crime Radio, actually, tonight. Thank you so much for joining me. Now, Kimster is not here tonight. She has taken the night off without pay, I might add. I'm going to let you in on a little secret here about radio and how it works, okay? Kimster, a lot of times you'll notice she'll take over for me, and you won't understand why all of a sudden I'm gone and Kimster's there. Well, that's because something has happened in my quote-unquote studio, and I've turned it over to Kimster, such as things that happen in my house. Dogs will start fighting over food. Dogs will throw up. Cats will bring in live but very close to dead various rodents and plop them on my lap during the show to show me how proud they are. This is all happening live, mind you. Then the cats throw up, and then I throw up. Lots of vomiting in this house. Anyway, since Kimster isn't here today, some of those things might happen. If they do, you get to enjoy them live on the air with me. Our guest tonight, a couple of incredible people, Dr. Lillian Glass. Dr. Glass, are you with us?
I sure am. Thank you so much for having me on your show.
How are you, my dear?
Great. I just got a new little puppy, so we may have interesting stories to tell, too. Little Annabella.
How cute. What kind of dog?
I have a golden doodle, and she's 2 months old, and she is just, if you go to my Facebook page, you can see her. She is just adorable, smart as a whip, and a handful. It's like living with a toddler.
Well, let me tell you, it's going to get even more so. Not only are golden doodles absolutely brilliant animals, but they have boundless energy like I have never seen. They're like a wind-up rubber band toy that never stops. So, but they're the best. What a great breed to what a great crossbreed, you know, a lab and a
doodle. I'm going to have her as a therapy dog, so she's going to be helping a lot of people in crisis and be very affectionate with them. So she's got her work cut out for her.
That is wonderful. Well, Dr. Glass, you're always doing so much to help so many, and we really do appreciate it. Also joining us, Levi Page, but he's probably forgot about me again because I mean nothing in his life, and I'm used to that. So hopefully Levi will
he's forgotten about me, too, so we're in good shape.
We're good. Then I'm in great company if he's forgotten about you. Hopefully he'll be calling in soon. But Dr. Glass, one of the reasons I wanted to have you on Trisha's True Crime Radio is your book, which I have in front of me, and I have not been able to put down. People, after this show, you must dash to buy this book by Dr. Lillian Glass. It's called The Body Language Advantage, and it basically shows you what you need to look for so you can tell when people are lying to you or if they're telling the truth. But Dr. Glass, I want to state right off the bat, I mean, obviously you're a highly educated woman. This book isn't meant to make people into other little mini Dr. Lillian Glasses. It's just kind of a general guide, right?
Oh, no, they are.
It's meant
to make into mini Dr. Glasses. Yeah, I want everybody to be a Dr. Glass. Because the more people know about this, the more people that know how to read people, they're going to save their lives. They're going to save their lives so they don't get swindled, so they don't meet the wrong person and get led down the wrong path, so they can smell if something's just not right, if there could be potential criminal activity. I want the world to know this, to know what I know. So the beauty of this book is I gave away every one of my secrets. I have nothing to hide. I have nothing to save. Everything's for everybody.
Boy, that is the truth. And what's great is you have pictures. And these
pictures are beautiful.
Are amazing.
They're not like in some books you see little drawings or whatever and they don't make sense. This stuff is real, and it's real people, but engaged in a way that you'll always remember. Oh, yeah, I remember that so-and-so did that. I remember back when, you know, I had that boyfriend and he shuffled his feet around, and, yeah, he was lying to me.
Because, see, here's what's interesting, and I'll try and create theater of the mind here for everybody listening. On page 49, there's a picture. The model is gorgeous, by the way. And she's got kind of this pleading look, and her hand gestures, you can see the backs of her hands, not her palms. Now, I look at it, and my first thought was she's saying, hey, look at my boobs. Aren't they great? That's kind of what it looks like. But it's not. What she's saying is she's not telling you the truth. She's hiding something. So something as simple as someone using their hands to talk with, but they're showing you the backs of their hands, and they're kind of in a almost like a semi-cupped, if you will. To me, that's fascinating. Why? Why do we do that? Why does this body language thing work? Why does this book let us in on these secrets?
Well, it's based on scientific research. You know, body language is both an art and a science. It's a science in the fact that it is it's duplicated. It can be duplicated in many instances, and everything is in context, though. So you can't really, just because someone's scratching their nose, they may have dried out sinuses. So that doesn't mean they're lying. So everything has to be in context. But if you're talking to somebody and you're talking about a crucial issue, like where were you last night or were you there last night, and all of a sudden you see them scratch their nose, and then you see some other tells, like they'll shuffle their feet or they'll lick their lips. All of a sudden, their autonomic nervous system is taking over, and they're a little tense, they're a little nervous, and they could be deceiving you.
And that's the one thing I do want to get across, too. You do have to take in the totalitary, everything around you, if you will.
Absolutely.
You know, because you don't want to say, you're lying to me. And like you said, the guy's saying, no, I'm not. My nose was just, I had to scratch it. Come on, give me a break.
Exactly. And what I look for, especially when I assist attorneys, and I'll be in the courtroom, and I'll see a witness speak, and I'll listen to what they've said in response to certain questions, or I'll analyze deposition tapes, and I'll see, based on the question, what is the response? What is the tell that I'm getting? Are they looking away? Are they looking to the right? Are they looking down? Are they licking their lips? Are they stammering? Are they saying, like, and, you know, we see so many cases of this, that it, when we learn to recognize it, it's a whole different language, and we really save ourselves a lot of time. You know, there are a lot of people that we meet, and all of a sudden we think, I don't really like them, or there's something about them that puts me off. And when you get to understand body language and the signals they're giving off, you'll know why. There could be some hidden agenda. They may not really like you that much, and it may come across in their body language, and yet they may fawn over you and tell you how great they are, but that's a lie because you're picking things up.
Well, that's very interesting that you say that, because I think everybody in their life has had somebody that acts like they like you, and for some reason you just don't like them. You don't want to be friends with them. And there's really no reason why. You're saying that there could be telltale body language signs that are coming through that we're, maybe our subconscious is picking up on?
Yeah. Well, no, or not necessarily subconscious, but you're conscious. Like, maybe you're sensing that they're fake. You don't like them because you know they really don't like you deep down inside.
Mm-hmm.
Yet they're so sweet and sickening and sugary, or they're going on, or they're saying one thing, or they may like you just so they can use you for something.
And we do have a question. Lyra213, go ahead and type in your question, and I will get it to Dr. Glass here in just a moment.
What a pretty name, Lyra.
I know, isn't that pretty?
Oh, wow.
So we have lots of great people in our chat room right now.
I know you do. I love your whole organization.
Oh.
I'm so impressed with you and the work you've done, Tricia. I mean, really, you are a blessing. You're a good person, and you really care about people, and it really shows.
Oh, you are so sweet. Thank you. And Dr.
True.
Glass, I have to be honest with you. All I do is just kind of set up a template, and everybody else does the work. And I sit back and go, wow,
right.
You guys do a great job.
But you monitor it well, and you do it with integrity. And that means a lot. That means a lot. You do it with decency, and that's a big thing. That's a big thing.
Well, thank you. And that, I have to give a shout-out to our wonderful moderators and my business partner and co-owner, Sue.
Oh,
They work night and day on that to make sure that people know when they come to Web Sleuths they can't pull any of that bully crap that they can pull elsewhere. That's
right.
For sure. So we use the equivalent of you know, talking language. We can tell certain things when people start posting that they're going to be troublemakers. Maybe we should write a book on that.
Isn't that the case?
It is. It's true. There are so, you know, I'm not going to give away what the secrets are, but some, what people will start posting in a certain manner or say a certain thing, and it's a red flag, and it never fails us. So
it's true, and people want to be sometimes, you know, when you have a little modicum of fame like you do, and myself, you know, people just want to be contentious to be contentious. And I usually say, take your contentiousness elsewhere. It's not welcome. You
exactly.
know, I don't mind a disagreement. I love it when people disagree because it gives me a reason to think about it, maybe to look at it from another point of view, but be respectful, be decent about it.
That's
don't
all
be,
you need to do.
Don't be cutting a person down personally or being obnoxious. You know, there's no reason for that.
You don't have to be. Absolutely not. Dr. Glass, we're talking with Dr. Lillian Glass. You've got to go buy her new book. It is a requirement by me. It's called The Body Language Advantage. You will learn everything that Dr. Glass has learned about body language, and it will help you in your life. We have a couple of questions here. Let's see. Lyra, where is it here? Okay, hold on. I just lost it. Just a minute here. It's pretty amazing. Oh, here it is. So does expressions of an angry-looking face, when in fact the person isn't angry, does that tell you anything? You know, they look mad, but they're not. What does that tell you?
Remember when your mom used to tell you when you were younger, you better not make that expression or you'll freeze into it? Well, there's kind of something truth about that in terms of muscle memory. If you're an unhappy person, oftentimes your muscles may course in an unhappy position, or you've had a lot of stress in your life. They may course in a certain way. So even though you may not be unhappy at the moment, it may show. There may be some genetic things with your face, too, that allow the muscles to course a certain way. And in that case, it's in your best interest to have, I'm a big proponent of it if it helps you, but I'm not a big proponent if it's, you know, just for vanity, but plastic surgery, because sometimes I knew a case of a person that had their eyes were kind of always droopy. They had very heavy lids, and people would always say, are you tired? Are you sleepy? And they were just sick of it, and they had the upper lid removed, and my goodness, you know, it's a whole different life for them.
All of a sudden
so
they
sometimes
look.
Sometimes that's
right.
important to do, especially this can be done with what's called the rhesus muscle, the muscle that you use around your mouth to smile. Sometimes it can be lifted and can make a whole difference in how people perceive you. You know, whether we like it or not, we don't live in a world where people don't judge you. They do. They judge you by the way you look, by the way you speak, by the way you. You write. I mean, I know me with my little dyslexia here. You know, I have issues with that. But, you know, a lot of times people, you know, they make assessments of you, and whether it's good or bad, it just is. So in order to have the best advantage, especially from a body language point of view, because, you know, you only have the first time to make an impression on someone in terms of the way you come across when you meet them personally. And when you have a lot of these good habits, people perceive you differently.
Right.
And it's all about being real, being connected. You know, there's so many books that tell you, do this, do this, do this. That's not what this is about. This is really about being real and learning to read the real signs so you understand what's going on.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And let's talk about that for just a moment. You know, you don't want people, I don't mean to put words in your mouth, but you don't want people to panic and worry about how they're being perceived and do they put their hands here or what they do. Just be yourself and be honest and you should be fine, right?
Exactly, because the body doesn't lie. It comes out. See, we have this thing in our brain, in the middle of our brain, and it's called the limbic system. Mm-hmm. And that is responsible for all emotion. So what happens is the emotion triggers certain muscle movements, certain behaviors, and that's why we do things. So even though you're telling somebody something, they may give it away. You know, we saw so much of this in the Casey Anthony story, where we saw the mother, you know, give so many signals of deception. We saw the father give so many signals of deception. And even though they thought they were telling the truth in their minds, or maybe they didn't think it, but the deception signal came out constantly. the stammering, the looking away, the lip licking. You know, it was amazing to witness that.
It was. You know, that was a classic case of people lying over and over and over. That's one for the classroom. That's one that we could all learn from.
Boy.
Here's something interesting that you say in your book. We're talking with Dr. Lillian Glass, The Body Language Advantage. Dr. Glass tells us everything about reading body language, and it is so important because it can save your life. Now, at the top of the page, you have a quote here. It says, "Some people will continually maintain eye contact with you in an attempt to make you think they're telling the truth." Well, okay, so I make eye contact with somebody, but I'm lying. How do you tell? If someone makes continual eye contact with you, isn't that a good thing? Why would you think they're lying?
Oh, it's a very bad thing. Because, see, continual, and you know who did this? Drew Peterson. We saw this a lot during his interviews where he would talk to the interviewer and his eyes were just locked into theirs. And this is, you know, this is a pathology. This is not a normal behavior. Because we blink, we look away, we come back to the person. And when you look in directly into a person's eyes, that's not a good thing because even though we're told, look me in the eye. Yeah, mm-hmm. Look at the direction of the eyes. Look in the direction of the face. Be sincere. But when you look and stare at someone without moving and you're locked in, unless you're madly in love with the person, there's a problem there. And it's usually a signal of deception.
Okay, got it. We do have another question from our chat room. It says, what's Dr. Glass's thoughts on people having gaydar? We've heard that term gaydar, you know, where you can tell a gay person. Is that something real, or is it just
you pick
up on signals?
Well, I'll tell you something. I've had a lot of clients who've been all types of areas of some heterosexuals, homosexuals, transgender patients, you know, all different types of people. And, you know, I don't really like to say that there is a gaydar situation because, you know, people are of all shapes, sizes, colors, packages, and they communicate differently. So I think that's just a generalization. I mean, there's an affectation that people can create that we're all familiar with, but usually that doesn't determine if somebody's gay or not.
Got it. I have a question from a dear friend of mine. He is an amazing man, an amazing news person. His name is Dan Baumus, and he asks, can we learn anything from the faces we make when we're alone? Obviously, we change when we're around other people. So if we're talking to ourselves or looking at ourselves in the mirror, is there anything there? Is there anything to that?
Oh, yes. In fact, one of the best things you can do is videotape yourself when you're on the phone to someone. Then you could really see how you feel.
Really?
Because you
now,
pick
that's
up
fascinating.
A lot of, yeah, you could pick up a lot of things. You know, you may be knitting your brow as you're talking to that person all the time. And that may be, you may be tense around them. There may be a underlying tension. Or there may be an eye-rolling thing going on. And that may seem like, oh, gosh, there they go again. Or biting your lip. Because you don't want to really let out what you really think about the person. So there's all kinds of things that you can do.
So
and
you can
analyze
study
yourself. That's a great thing to do.
Right. Just put a mirror up and talk to somebody and be loose
well,
and real.
A mirror, that used to be back in the day where people used to use the mirror and stuff. But now you just put on
videotape.
Your camera when you're,
yeah.
You know, you just put on your cell phone and
there you go.
Talk and then ignore it. And then you'll see something really fascinating happen.
That is a great question. Leave it up to Dan Baumus to come up with something that I would never, ever think of. That was a good question.
Great question.
Another question, and we have talked about this before, but I want to reiterate. You have studied the body language of John and Patsy Ramsey, right?
Oh, yes. I did.
And in general, I know what's coming because my blood pressure is already rising just thinking about this case.
It was odd.
Yeah. But what did you think?
Well, you know, back in the day, they didn't communicate well. I mean, it didn't seem like Patsy did not come across very credible.
No,
there
she wasn't at all.
There, at all. And it came out in her body language, and John was kind of like non-communicative. He didn't, you know, let it all out and say, hey, look, we're so freaked out here. What happened? You know, there was something very stiff. Something very, very protective. And, of course, we never heard from the boy, from their son.
Yeah, their son. There's a whole...
You know, I don't know. The whole thing is very, very odd. And the poor little girl, she would have been, what, in her 20s now?
Oh, yes.
And
yes,
just so sad. So sad. Dr. Glass,
I'm going to send you a book. It's by one of the investigators in the district attorney's office. He just couldn't, his conscience just wouldn't let him stay still. And he quit his job. He wrote a book, and it's absolutely appalling, but I think it'll really.
And what does he say? What's his bottom line?
Well, his bottom line is there absolutely was no intruder. They still haven't eliminated anybody who was in that house tonight. And basically, the DA at the time, Mary Lacey, was incompetent and basically just so biased out of her gourd that she early on said, Patsy Ramsey couldn't do it. She said, you don't understand women like I do. Patsy couldn't do it. She's just a lunatic. She's a lunatic. And lunatics get elected to offices, and she got elected as the Boulder DA. But anyway, he's written an amazing book. His name is James Kohler. I'll send it to you. It's called A Foreign Faction.
Thank you so much. Oh.
Who Kidnapped JonBenet Ramsey. It will appall you, and it'll shed so much light on the case.
Beautiful.
But back to body language. I have one question from the audience, and then I have another question. We're going to talk about speech language or speech words can lead you to what people are thinking or doing. Okay, we have a question here. They ask, when I talk to my husband, he is rubbing his chin. What does that indicate? Does that indicate, I don't know, lice?
He's not sure. When he's rubbing his chin, he says that he's not sure. It's kind of like a self-soothing, like, what's she going to do now? What's she going to tell me? Is she going to tell me how much money she spent? Or, I don't know if I believe her. Let's see. So, again, it's more of a people, when they cogitate, when they think about things, they'll rub their chin as a form of self-soothing.
Okay, so it's not lice. That was my first
thought. Maybe it could be a thing where maybe there's an aggression. You know, maybe there's in that relationship where the woman is always like picking a fight or something. And he's like, okay, when's it coming? What's happening here? Be cautious.
No itchy beard, no bugs, just perhaps self-soothing. That's a very interesting point.
Yeah, self-soothing.
Okay, I was just kidding about the lice, by the way, Lyra.
No, don't. It's a lot
okay.
of that.
I have a question here, all right? Deceptive talk. Now, that is something I think that can really save our lives in addition to knowing the body language. But how many times, you know, in this day and age, we don't hardly see anybody anymore.
Right.
Let me
explain something to you. When we talk about body language, it's not just the body language. And those quote-unquote body language experts that tell you about, the body does this and this means that, that's one part of it. That's like looking at an elephant and you're just feeling the tail and saying it's a long, skinny animal. Or you're feeling the trunk, their leg and saying, oh, no, it's a big, short, fat animal. No, it's really about looking at the whole picture. You have to look at the facial expression. You have to look at the body language, the body movement. You have to look at the voice, the tone, and you have to look at the speech content, what is said, what is said, and how it's said. So the whole picture together constitutes what we know as body language. But the way one speaks can tell you everything. If they're lying, sometimes I'll hear, you know, and I spent a lot of my life working in vocal forensics and also working with people in Hollywood, teaching them how to have certain voices for different roles and getting their voices together. So I know a lot about the voice, the human voice, and you can tell so much about a person. What goes on in your head and your heart comes out in the way you speak. And I didn't make this up. Galen, the Greek philosopher from back in way centuries ago, said this. And it really is so true today, because what goes on in your head and what goes on in your heart, what you're thinking, comes out in your tone. And you know this. If you see somebody or you hear somebody and they're talking really loud, hi, how are you doing? They need a lot of attention. You know, they're very insecure people oftentimes. If you hear someone that dies off at the end of sentence, they also need a lot of attention. But there's like a passive aggression going on with this type of a person. If a person's monotone, devoid of emotion, that you can often tell when you're looking at criminal cases, especially somebody that shows no remorse about something. There's no inflection in their voice. So the tone of a voice tells you everything about a person.
Dr. Glass, you talked about the tone, and it made me think of something, because Dan Bomas was here when this happened. He and I worked together, and it just came into my mind. Real briefly, I was involved in a hostage situation. A guy took hostages at the Salt Lake Library and then called the radio station, and we played his music for him so he didn't kill everybody. Basically, happy ending. The hostages were free only because there was a sheriff that had been taken hostage as well, and he ended up killing the hostage taker. The guy had bombs and everything. So, but I gave an interview right after that to the local TV, and I watched it a year or so ago, and I was completely monotone. I was stunned. And
well, you could have been numb. I mean, you could have been numb. And also, you were in the capacity, you weren't a victim. You were
no.
in the capacity of a reporter, I assume, or, mm-hmm. or somebody who was being objective. So, in essence, you were probably trying to maintain your professionalism and trying to get the points across. And that's what we see oftentimes. You know, we don't usually see our news anchors or news people crying and carrying on. Well, there's a few of them out there
right.
that do the high drama. But most of them, they're trying to be pretty objective. And it's very – and that could be what's operating there, too.
Well, that's true. And so I guess you do have to look at the circumstances
context.
Surrounding the person.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And
exactly.
so in a crime situation – somebody could have like a flat affect, but could it be because they're numb? Because they're
it could be because they're numb, or it could be because it could be for a number of reasons. If they were the criminal, it could be because they didn't have any emotion on it, or if they mm-hmm. were, or they could have been trying to be objective and not wanting to wear their emotion on their sleeve. So there's a lot of reasons why people do things, and that's why context is important, and that's where. Knowing before whom you stand is important,
mm-hmm.
and just knowing people. You know, it's interesting. I had a client years and years and years ago that came into my practice, and he, everybody told me, this guy is the greatest guy. He wants to do a lot of television work because he works with all these celebrities, and he helps them with their finances and everything, and he's this great guy. The second he came into my office, I heard him speak, and it was a very monotone, quiet, low voice. I went, whoa, I'm not going to help this guy because I'm not going to help him do something wrong.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, I don't think I can help you. And guess who's doing time? This guy.
That guy. You knew right off.
I felt it. I saw it. I heard it.
Oh, wow. See, wouldn't that be great if we could all become that good? Just
yeah,
think how we could.
I'm telling you, read the book. I wrote it purposely for that. I don't need to write another book. I've written 18 books, and, mm-hmm. you know, I've had several bestsellers. The reason I wrote this is I want to give it all away. I want everybody to know this, because this is what it's all about. This is what's going to make a difference in your life. It's not about just selling books. It's about saving your life.
Well, and that you have, Dr. Glass. We're talking to Dr. Lillian Glass. She is a world-renowned expert on body language. And Dr. Glass has written a book, which you have to buy, again, a requirement, The Body Language Advantage, Maximize Your Personal and Professional Relationships with this ultimate photo guide to deciphering what others are secretly saying in any situation. And I have to say, the pictures are fantastic. Absolutely.
Thank you.
Let's talk about hiding and masking. You've touched on it just a little bit, Dr. Glass. I mean, obviously, when you're talking to a little kid and they're lying, they're looking all over the place, they don't want to stare at you. But let's say you're talking to your boss, and, you know, this has happened to me when we were getting ready to have the program, the radio station was changing format and everybody was getting fired, and they were denying it to me. And I remember meeting with my boss and him looking me in the eye and denying that everybody was going to lose their job. What can you look for when somebody you think is that good of a liar? How do they try and mask their words using their body?
Well, they're going to oftentimes beat around the bush. They're not going to get to the point. They'll say, no, everybody here is going to keep their job. They're going to do really well. And he'll usually give some accolades or something positive. Instead of saying, no, that's ridiculous. Come on, don't be ridiculous. Nobody's going to lose their job. You see,
mm-hmm.
that's a whole different thing than, no, we're going to make it a point. Nobody's going to lose their job here. Everybody's going to be fine. There could be another thing. He could have been in denial, too, that he didn't want this to happen.
So
either.
He could even tell himself it's not going to happen. It's not gonna,
and so, as I said,
across.
Everything is context. So you always have to look at what people do. You know, more than just a body language expert, I fancy myself as a behavioral analyst. In fact, that's what, when I go into the courtroom and as an expert witness, that's what I am. It's not just a body language expert, it's a behavioral analyst. And so this is kind of like about behavior, and you have to look at the context and what's done and why and who said what and why they do things. So it's kind of, it's really fascinating.
It is. I could talk about this all day. Let's talk about the sexes here for a moment. I have a good friend, a guy, who's told me my whole life, Tricia, guys don't want to be friends with you. They act like they're friends for only one reason, because they want to sleep with you. Although he put it in a little more harsh terms. Let's talk about the sexes. Are all guys just basically coming on to women, or can you tell? What are the subtle hints? I mean, talk to me
here.
Tell me, if you want
to know if a guy likes you, look at his feet. If his toes are pointed near, look at his feet. If his toes are pointed in your direction, chances are he's connecting with you. If they're turned the other way, near the door, or near, you know, one toe's one way and the other toe's the other way, quite a bit can be told. You know, one of the things I'm asked to do in the media is a lot, which I kind of love doing. A lot of the magazines, the celebrity magazines, from the Cosmo to the Globe to Us Weekly, In Touch Weekly, all those magazines, they ask me, what do I think about what's really going on in a relationship with the certain celebrities? And for example, like with Kristen Stewart and with Robert Pattinson. I was not surprised that this affair had taken place on Kristen Stewart's part, because I could tell by their body language in terms of how their past photos were. She was never always into him. He was always all over her, body language wise, leaning into her. She'd lean away. She wouldn't smile. She would look very aloof. And so you knew something was up.
Now, you've heard, let's be a little gossipy here, because I love gossip. You've heard they're back together. They're talking.
That's what I've heard. And, you know, I'll tell you something. One of the things she said, or he said, one of them said about the smell. They can't get their smell. They love each other's smell or whatever. And there's such something to pheromones. You know, there is something to that connection, that sometimes, you know, the person goes back and back and back to the relationship that may or may not work, but it has a lot to do with the chemistry, and we talk about that pheromone chemistry. So maybe that's what's going on there.
That very well could be.
And maybe
that's
he likes that dynamic of kind of like, well, you know, she did me wrong. I'm going to try to get her back. But I think she's the one that's been in charge of that relationship, as you could tell by the photographs.
Absolutely. We do have another question here. The body language of a bank robber is one thing to judge for their next move. What about a suicide bomber? Would it be harder to ID because they are not generally as nervous? You know, somebody's going to commit suicide. They've kind of, you know, resolved themselves.
Good question.
That is a great question, isn't it?
And in fact, I would suggest that you read my book that I wrote called, I can't even remember what it's called. It was last year. But I wrote it with an FBI agent. It's called Identifying Terrorists Through Their Body Language. And you can get it on Amazon. And I wrote it with D. Vincent Sullivan, who is an FBI agent and former FBI agent. And we wrote this book on how to detect suicide bombers, all kinds of people. These are scary people. A lot of times you will see a lot of excitement with them. You'll see hyper movement with them because their adrenaline's going a million miles a moment. They may be laughing. They may be, you know, when we look at what happened with the Mumbai bombers, in fact, I have a lot of photographs in the book that depict suicide bombers and how they react. There's a lot of excitement in terms of what's happening. And when they finally realize, when they have to give their little speech that they're going to give, and they realize what they're doing, it's quite scary for them, and they kind of get a reality check. But again, they're in it too deep. So you see this amazing movement. I have video analysis of what I did, but I took the actual video screenshots, and we see the body language of the terrorists, the 9/11 terrorists, when they went on the airplane and how they acted at the airport. So it's quite fascinating to look at all of these things.
They were very arrogant, weren't they? The
9/11. Some of them were, and some of them, you know, they were brainwashed. A lot of them,
mm-hmm.
you know, a lot of them were, you know, this is masterminded by somebody higher than they are. So it's like a whole hierarchy thing.
We're going to get back to the pointed toes in just a moment, because that to me is fascinating. In case we have people just joining us and you missed it, Dr. Glass revealed something that just has the whole world stunned, basically. We've all come to an absolute complete halt because nobody thought the pointing of someone's feet would mean anything. We're going to talk about that. I want to stay on the bombers for just a moment. You know the story of James Wood, the actor, and the airline. Right.
I talked about that in my book.
Yeah, why don't you talk about that a little bit, because that's so
fascinating. Well, James Wood was on a flight. He's an actor, and he's very much into body language. He's very much into people's behaviors and how they react. And he was sitting in first class, and he noticed that the people next to him, seated in first class, they didn't order anything to drink. They were talking loudly. They were very rude to the stewardess. They were very mean to her. They were very... they were saying things, making, you know, he picked up a few words, even though they were speaking in their language, he picked up a few words that were very uncomfortable. So he called the stewardess, and he said, can you please talk to the pilot and tell them that there's a problem? So they brought the pilot to him, and he told them. And as it turned out, this was a dry run for what was going on in 9/11. Some of the people that were on that that plane were some of the people that committed the vile acts.
And James Wood picked up on it.
And that's what we're saying. You know, see something, hear something, say something. Because this could save your life. You know, we live in a society where we don't want to squeal on people. We don't want to say something because we could get, you know, sued, or we don't want to, you know, make waves, or we just want to ignore it and mind our own business. But in this world, we need to be our brother's keeper and watch out for each other.
Exactly. And about the terrorists, this obviously was before 9/11, so it was before we were really aware of what
it was like a month or so before, from what I understand. It was a dry run right before it happened, and it was really quite shocking when you see and when you hear everything that went on. But there are things to look at. You know, if people are walking in single files, if they've got inappropriate clothing on, for example, very thick clothing on in hot weather, a lot of sweaters, a lot of layers of clothing. You know, there's so much to worry about, like Peyton smelling. You know, we need a lot more dogs at the airport. You know, I know you're a dog lover and so am I, but we need a lot of more Peyton smelling dogs, which is a chemical that you just need a little bit of that can blow up a whole plane. And it's scary out there. I mean, what's happening in the world, and we just really have to be so vigilant and so aware. One of the things that we talk about in the book is to look at people's body language. Don't profile people based on their race or their creed or how they look, because the point is, most of the terrorists want to blend in. They're not going to be looking like a stereotypic person you have in your mind that would be a terrorist. So you want to look at body language. You want to look at behaviors, how they interview you at the airport, like the Israelis. You know, when they have 100% success rate, nobody gets on that plane because they interview you and they look at you. So many times, you know, you go to the airport and you're asked a question. Hey, did you pack your bags? And they go, yeah, okay, go through. But that's that question. You need to look at the person. You need to also ask other questions. So, you know, it's going to be very interesting to see what's happening in our future.
Exactly. And let me just say one more thing about the James Wood incident. What's fascinating is before 9/11, I would pretty much have to be sitting next to somebody screaming death to America before I would ever get up and say, I'm worried about this person. James Woods saw those small signals that I bet not one other person picked up on, and he actually reported it to the pilot. Now we're much more hypervigilant, and, you know, we're always watching. So it will be a little bit easier now, but I just think that says a lot about James Wood. He went to the top of my list as one of my favorite people. I hope if I ever meet
wonderful.
him, his toes are pointing toward me. Let's talk about the toes again. This is just kills me. So you're saying if I am talking to a guy, you have to be standing face-to-face, right?
Or sitting. Or let's say you guys are going out to dinner, and you want to know how he's really feeling about you. If his toes are pointing your direction, that's a good sign. If he's leaning away from you, that's not a good sign. If he's leaning back, or if he's leaning to the side, if he's looking around the room, not a good sign. So there's a whole bunch of little signals that you can look at, and I tell you that in the book. And this way you don't waste your time. You see if somebody's connected with you. And you can even deal it in business, too. Deal with that in business. If somebody's not getting you or they don't like you, you know, then you can kind of turn the conversation in maybe a different direction or analyze why they don't like you.
So, in other words, when I went out on a date the other night and this guy took his feet and put them behind his head, I guess that was a bad sign at dinner.
His feet or his hands?
His feet. It was awful at dinner. Picked up his feet and put them right behind
his feet behind his head?
I'm teasing Dr. Glass.
Oh, he could be a good yoga instructor.
He would be. But that would be my luck.
I mean,
that would be my luck.
But I thought what you said is he put his hands behind your head, his head. You know, that's a sign of arrogance a lot of times.
Oh, it is? What does that mean?
So he interlocked his head. It's kind of a smugness and, kind of like puffing himself out like a lot of the male peacocks do to make themselves bigger and more important.
You talk about feet and business. You have a picture in your book. We're talking with Dr. Lillian Glass, the fascinating book, The Body Language Advantage. And it's a picture of a foot, 2 feet, actually, and one of the feet are just perfectly on the ground. The other, the toes are touching the ground and the heel is up. And it says, if you're at a business or social event with someone and notice that his heel is off the ground when sitting or even standing, it's not a good sign. So
I want to get out of there, escape.
Really?
Yeah.
Should you try and turn it around, like you said, if it's a business meeting, or should you just go bye?
Well, you can't say, are you in a hurry or do you need to, you know, I know we're in a hurry. You know, they go, oh, that's right. You know, maybe they have a plane to catch or something. So, again, it's just being aware of what people are doing so you can make those changes and those analyses.
Okay, so let's talk about the eyes, because I have a problem. I think a lot of people do. I look people in the eye, but then I don't sit there and stare at them in the eye, and I look away. If somebody, say, has Asperger's syndrome, that's one of those conditions where they feel uncomfortable around people all the time, so they're not going to look you in the eye. If somebody has Asperger's syndrome, you can't really use body language, or can you?
Well, that's what they try to train a lot of Asperger syndrome patients to do, is to read other people. They don't have the capacity to do that, and that's what's so sad, you know, that they don't have that ability. So they really have to work hard at it. And I met a boy, I was giving a lecture about 2 months ago, and I met him in Orlando, Florida, and he had Asperger syndrome. His mother was with him, and he was just so social and really had to work at a lot of these things. It was very impressive.
That is amazing that they're able to now show people with Asperger's syndrome exactly what they need to do and how to fit into society even more, which is good because, you know, just as early as a few years ago, those poor people were having a hell of a time. Okay, this is interesting from your book, The Body Language Advantage. If you know what to look for, you can tell when a smile is genuine or forced. Tell us what to look for.
Yes, sometimes you'll see someone that has, like, their eyes aren't smiling and their face is, like, you know, pulled back. And, you know, they're gritting their teeth. That's not a very honest smile. So it's it's something to really be very aware of. You know, if somebody's look at their eyes. If their eyes aren't crinkling, if there's no light in their eyes, they're not really connected to you.
Got it. Do you worry that somebody might take this book, like a sociopath, and train themselves how to manipulate their own body language into getting what they want?
You know, people have asked me that, but the truth is, the truth always leaks out. It leaks out. We've seen a lot of sociopaths, but something leaks out about them. There's something odd. There's something off. So you could train all you want, but the truth is going to come forward.
It will. It will. Yeah, that's what I figured. It would. You just can't. You can't keep it in. You just absolutely cannot keep the truth in. What would you say? What would you say your book, The Body Language Advantage, when you first meet someone, what is the first thing to look at? Let's just say you've met a stranger and it's a social situation. What is the first thing that you should absolutely look for to get keyed in on who they are and if they have good intentions or not?
Look how they're looking at you. Look if their smile is really genuine towards you. Look if they're leaning in towards you. Look if they're spending time with you. Look if they're listen to if they're talking about you, if they're asking questions about you, if they're interested and not trying to be interesting. That's very, very important to look at that.
We do have a question. This is one from one of our friends down under. Wonder Llama wants to know about Alan Pease. Do you know who Alan Pease is?
Oh,
and
British,
also,
yes. British fellow. Yeah.
Yes. What do you think?
It's fine. I mean, I don't. Some of the things that he's put forth, I'm not keen on, because my work is a little different. But on the other hand, if it helps people, God bless them.
There you go. Well, and we want to know, everybody wants to know, when does Dr. Glass get her own TV show?
We're working on it. In fact, it's interesting you say it. I'm in, you know, with my agent, we're in the negotiating stages right now, so hopefully something good will happen.
Will you remember the little people, Dr.
There's
Glass?
There's no little people. There's only big people. And you're one of them, and every fan, everybody out there I love. I mean, this is not about ego. This is really about doing something that can make a difference in the world. That's really where I'm at this point in my life.
Oh, this is fascinating. The Body Language Advantage, I'm just looking at these pictures. When a person feels insecure, he will often curl his fingers and not extend them, thereby minimizing the size of his hands. This can also occur when a person is being deceptive or angry. Tell us about that.
Oh, yeah. You know, you see this, too, a lot of times with the celebrity couples, and they'll be in a picture together, and they'll be hugging each other, but they'll have their hands balled into a fist. So there's some underlying anger, or they're mad at each other, or something's going on with each other. So it's kind of, there's a hidden text that you can look at.
That is just amazing. So basically, when you're talking to somebody or meeting with people, almost, not always, but almost all of their movements kind of mean something. The truth is leaking out, as you say.
It's something you can't control. It happens in the brain. Also, let's get back to sociopaths for a minute.
Mm-hmm.
With sociopaths, there's a way they communicate, too, that's not normal. I mean, a lot of times, you know, you think, oh, they're charming and everything, but if you really listen to them, sometimes they don't make sense oftentimes. For example, like, the way they're reasoning, the way they communicate. For example, if you say, do you know what time it is? They'll say no. And then you'll say, what time do you have on your watch? And they'll say it's 3 o'clock. You see, so there's something cognitively off about them brain-wise. So it's fascinating. Mm-hmm. There is a different way in terms of how they think and different testing that you can kind of do on them.
Now, how do you tell if someone is a sociopath when you first meet them? Because I was just going to say, so many women, especially, will come across a charming guy that'll sweep them off their feet, and then, bam, they're toast. How do you avoid that?
Well, again, so many times with relationships, you've got that pheromone going on. You've got that emotional, you know, the hormones going on. You've got the kind of Cinderella, you know, fantasy going on, like, oh, this is my Prince Charming. But the key is always to keep the eyes open and to know that behavior is what happens. And like, as pretty does, as a good relationship is the relationship does. You know, what they do, how they react to you, how they treat you consistently. That's very important.
And sometimes if it seems too good to be true, if they move too fast, that's a key right there, right?
Huge bad sign. If somebody starts talking about the children that you're going to have and your honeymoon and go away with me and they just met you for an hour, run as fast as your little feet can carry you, because it's not going to happen.
Exactly.
These are very sick, manipulative people.
Another big sign is if they say, you know, I've got all this money and I'm rich, but it's all tied up. Can you pick up the check tonight? You know, that's
you pick
a big
up the check and you never
right.
see them again.
Exactly.
Because that's what they'll tell you. Again, that's not the kind of person. You want a real person with a real relationship, with real feelings, and that doesn't have time for these games and this manipulation. But no, that's you don't, oh yeah, or I left my wallet at home. No.
Right. No, and it's always bragging about the money, but you never seem to see the money. It's scary
right.
out there, like you said, Dr. Glass. I mean, I
but
understand.
It won't be.
Well, that's true. Once you learn, it's I always tell my friends, I should just get it over with, get 80 cats, become the, you know, weird cat lady that lives alone, and just do it. Just do it all at once, because it's scary out there. You know, I go out with friends or whatever, and it's like, who do you trust? Who do you believe? You know, and the guys that are my age all want 20-year-olds, and it's like, you know, I'm just going to be the crazy cat lady and just get it over with. go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, but, you know, it's so important that there are so many things we do that we want to believe that everybody's good and wonderful and fabulous. But we really have to see and analyze and know before whom we stand. And I think that's what I give you in this book. And this is what I want everyone to know, because I see so many people, men and women, with broken hearts that could have been avoided if they just would have looked and knew and listened to themselves, and if they knew certain things to be aware of. You know, there are people that I've spoken to that have said, you know, I was walking down the aisle, and all of a sudden I knew that was just not the person for me, but I went ahead with it anyway. Well, that tells you something. But before you walked down the aisle, there was something that person was telling you that was wrong.
Exactly. Dr. Glass, this book is going to save people's lives. It's going to save people a lot of heartache. And that's why it is an important book, not just because it's interesting, but because it can save your life. It's called The Body Language Advantage by Dr. Lillian Glass. And Dr. Glass, do you have a moment to discuss Munchausen by proxy, or do you have to
run?
Yes,
I do. I sure do. And this is a disorder that is so scary. Mm-hmm. But again, we look at patterns. We look at consistency. And when you see the consistency of a parent that is constantly telling you that their child is sick, or that there's something wrong with them, or they were in the hospital a lot of times, or there's something off about them, it's oftentimes a cry for attention on their part and wanting to be the star and to be felt sorry for. And so they'll oftentimes purposely make their child sick so that they can have that, oh, you poor parent syndrome feeling. And this is a very sick disease. And very scary.
It's very scary because it's hard to diagnose, basically. And I just want to say straight out, I am asking this for a reason. It's not necessarily a case that we're discussing on Web Sleuths. I don't even want to get into what it's about. But here's the problem. Okay, let's say that you suspect someone of Munchausen by proxy, but you've only talked to them on the phone. Is there something in their language that you can watch for? Is it just kind of a general feeling?
Yes.
I mean,
yes.
Talk to me.
There's a victim approach. Look what I did, and I had to do this, and I had to take her to the hospital, and oh, you know, and it's just overwhelming, and oh, look, it centers on them, not necessarily on the child oftentimes. Yeah, they were sick. They'll tell you that objectively, but it's merely, and then I rushed her here, and then I, look at how many I's are used.
That's very, very good. You look at how many I's are used as opposed to my child this, and this is what happened. Very interesting.
But they'll talk about themselves, and they'll kind of like make themselves the star of the statement or the whole story, and the, you know, what they've had to go through because of their child.
But what about somebody that is just that way? They like being the center of attention, and they really do have a sick child. There really is a problem there. How do you differentiate between somebody like that and Munchausen by proxy?
How many sicknesses does a child have, and how much are the sicknesses related to each other? Mm-hmm. You know, if they all of a sudden had a broken leg, then they had a broken arm, then they had a broken tooth, then they had a stomach problem, then they had a virus. You know, if they're all over the place, that tells you something. But usually, when they're diseased or have an infirmment, are infirm and have an ailment, they are, there is a consistency to that ailment.
A cancer or arthritis, or yes, I see.
Right. So there's a consistency to that type of disorder. So if it's all over the place, you can bet it's pretty much Munchausen by proxy.
There's a group out there, and I apologize, I cannot remember their name, but it's a group of mothers who say they have been falsely accused of Munchausen by proxy, and that Munchausen by proxy doesn't even exist.
Oh, it does exist. I've seen it live many times in person.
Tell us about your experience, your personal experiences with Munchausen by proxy.
Well, you know, I've seen cases where the child would have you know, various disorder, like all the time. The child is always in trouble. Like it was kind of like a black cloud all over this child's head.
Mm-hmm.
They broke the leg. They broke the foot. Then they, you know, just happened to get the stomach problem. The whole family went on vacation, and they're the ones that were sick. Then they happen to have the virus. They happen to have the flu. They happen to have, but it's just too much. And,
mm-hmm.
Mother, when she talked about it, they relish in it, talking about the details of it. So it was quite fascinating.
So you've actually seen it. But can't there be the flip side to that? Can't there be an overzealous doctor or an overzealous friend who labels somebody Munchausen by proxy and gets them into all kinds of trouble? There are those cases, like that woman who was in prison, and then they found out that her daughter or her child had a genetic disorder that created this thing in her blood that looked like antifreeze. And then
right.
when she had no contact with one of her children and one of her other children got sick, that's when they discovered this bizarre genetic mutation that happened to her. I can't think of anything worse than being accused of harming your own child when you really didn't. How do we avoid that?
Well, it's very hard. But again, when she was talking about the blood disorder, the thing you need to realize is it's always related to a blood disorder. And you know, I don't know what tests were done. I don't know the specifics of the case, and how she got into a prison situation, and how, you know, I mean, they had to look at the whole context. And again, as we both have learned, a lot of it has to do with what kind of lawyer you have. If you have a good
mm-hmm.
lawyer, you know, you're going to be okay. But if you don't, or you have a weak lawyer, you're not going to be okay. So there's many factors here that we're talking about.
Please go ahead.
No, but it's something that's more of a rarity. But you look for consistency in the disease in itself. The disease is.
So does it always
usually they're all over the place. Usually
right.
Munchausen by proxy. It's not just one disorder, you know, because that they stick to. Or the blood. It's this. It's a lot of things. And there's many instances that you look at the medical files. They look at the emergency room, how they react in the emergency room, how they,
mm-hmm.
You know, what they say to the doctors. You know, there's a lot that goes into it.
Does it always have to be an illness? Can somebody be so obsessed with their child that they create situations that causes, you know, stress and drama to the child, but it's not an illness necessarily?
Well, it could be an emotional Munchausen by proxy.
Mm-hmm.
And that's
so that
a very
is
good
possible.
Point. Because, you know, how you think, so you are. If you keep thinking bad things are going to happen to your child, bad things are going to happen to your child.
Mm-hmm.
If you keep
right.
thinking good things are going to happen to your child, good things will happen. It's one thing about being protective and, you know, watch this, watch that. But it's another thing where you're constantly harping on certain things. And then it's kind of like, you know, the self-fulfilling prophecy.
Right. You fulfill your prophecy. Exactly. There are some very strange cases, Dr. Glass. We're talking with Dr. Lillian Glass, where it has actually continued, even when the child is old enough, say a teenager. It can continue, can't it, Munchausen by proxy, because the person is so manipulated by their parent?
Sure. And they've been so beaten down. But usually when they're able to speak up about it, that's why we don't see that many cases like that into their teens and 20s, because oftentimes the child, if they survive, they'll take charge and they'll go, wait a minute, you know, you did this to me, or you did that, or I saw you do this, or, you know, usually there's a rebellion part of it.
Mm-hmm. And does it always have to be a child, or can it be, you know, perhaps a daughter caring for her elderly mother and is causing her all kinds of illnesses? Do you ever see that in Munchausen?
Well, gosh, I had never seen that, but that's kind of an interesting take on it, unless, you know, that she wants the parent to pass on and get all the money. I don't know.
Well, we've seen that happen, too. Dr. Glass, you've got such a busy schedule, and you have spent a full hour with us. I want to thank you. Now, your book is available on Amazon, and I'm going to put a link up to your book. It's called The Body Language Advantage. Again, it's a very good book to read, but it is a must read so you can learn how to protect yourself from all the crazy people out there. We know because we've seen them when we've studied the cases on Web Sleuth. So it's The Body Language Advantage. Dr. Lillian Glass takes everything she knows and lets it all hang out so we can protect ourselves. And Dr. Glass, that just is a testament to what type of person you are, and I am proud to say that you're a friend. And if there's anything Web Sleuth can ever do for you, you know we are there for you.
Well, I'm there for you, too. You guys are the best.
Thank you, Dr. Glass, and you take care, and we will be in touch again, because I'm sure we're going to have lots to talk about in the coming years, okay?
Thank you so much. Okay, bye-bye. Thank you,
Trish. Wow, I love that woman. She is absolutely amazing. Dr. Lillian Glass, and the book, I'm going to say it again, The Body Language Advantage. You absolutely have to get this book. It's one of the most amazing books I have ever read. Okay, it's Trisha's True Crime Radio, and I want to say something about another friend of ours, David Lohr. Now, we all know David Lohr from Discovery ID. He's done a lot of shows there. He writes a blog. He's a true friend to true crime. And David Lohr's father was killed last night by a drunk driver. Very tragic, very sad. If you get a moment, go to David's Facebook page. That's DavidLohr, David Lohr. And David, on behalf of Trisha's True Crime Radio and everybody at Web Sleuth and Forms for Justice, our heart goes out to you and our thoughts and prayers. We will keep you and your family in our thoughts and prayers. And we're very, very sorry. Levi Page was supposed to join us tonight. He didn't. Therefore, I shall slap him upside the head the next time I see him, the little brat. We still love him, though. It's Trisha's True Crime Radio, where we always talk about true crime, current events, and we do it with common sense, right? Good night, everybody. Thank you.